You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. The title of this message is The Extermination of Judah. Ladies and gentlemen, this today is a serious subject, just like every week it is, but it is very serious. Now, I wanted to speak a little bit about teaching to you. Nobody got it, because maybe nobody's a Jethro Tull fan, but when I say I call myself the teacher, I mean, they call me the teacher, or that is what I call myself. It's from a Jethro Tull song called The Teacher. And yes, I am a teacher, and I'm happy to and honored. I'm honored to teach you, to be allowed to teach you. But I must warn you that teaching carries along with it a great responsibility. You know, I often pray to Yahweh and have just before this message, that he will not allow me to teach you anything that would be wrong or that would harm you. Because I don't want to be responsible for that. I don't want to teach improper things, improper doctrines. I do not want to teach lies. In the Judeo-Christian world, they don't seem to be too concerned about it. But if I were them, I'd be extremely concerned about it. They have no idea the danger they are in from Yahweh. It's unbelievable. It's scary, really, is what it is. That they have no idea, it seems, that of the danger that they are in. They must not realize what a great responsibility it is to teach. Now, I'm not perfect, as nobody is, except Yahweh himself, Yeshua. And I never claimed to be. And I've been wrong many times in my life, and I've been right many times in my life as well. I'm sure I'll be wrong again. But I'm not afraid of being wrong unless I'm teaching you something that's wrong. It's one thing to be wrong by yourself, but if you're teaching others and leading them into error and scattering the sheep, I would begin to be very fearful. So teaching is a great responsibility. I take it very seriously. And if you are a teacher, you should as well. Now, as a teacher, I've had many teachers. And one must learn how to weed through the teachings, to pluck the good berries out of the teaching, and to learn from the mistakes of others, shall I say. It's much easier to learn from the mistakes of others than to have to learn that lesson yourself, personally. And so that's just a little warning about teaching. They call me the teacher, or that is what I call myself. I just hope Yahweh calls me that. Because out of all my teachers, he is the number one teacher. He has always been the number one teacher and always shall be the number one teacher. I received or thought of an equation that goes with today's show. And though this equation could be much deeper than it is, I simplified it and I would say it goes this way. World War I plus World War II equals where we are today. And you may or may not perceive how deep that is in itself. Though it could be deeper than this, I'm telling you this is a deep equation. You see, there is a reason. You know, I asked, I said, you know, I don't see Yahweh's mercy in the situation of World War II Germany. I don't see his. But later on, I began to see his wisdom. Though those people were a sacrifice, Yahweh took many of them and brought them to America. As I have said before, in World War I, 55% of the population of America were German, or the tribe of Judah. And, you know, perhaps, you know, the tribe of Judah also has to go, you know, goes into Scotland. There's another protection. See, Yahweh sent the Boers to South Africa, who are also the tribe of Judah. And then some of the tribe of Judah are also scattered throughout other places in the world. So I see Yahweh's wisdom in this. When you look at it, he sent some of the tribe of Judah all around the world so he could protect them from what was coming down upon the world in World War I and World War II. So there is evidence of Yahweh's mercy. Though I couldn't see it earlier, I can see it now. This picture becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. Why does the devil and his children, the literal offspring of the devil, the Jews, who pretend to be the tribe of Judah, why do they hate and want to exterminate the tribe of Judah? There is a simple answer for this. In case you hadn't noticed, all the revolutions in Europe and in Russia and so on and so forth, the many exterminations that have taken place, made it so that Germany was the last vestige, the last hope of protection in Europe. Germany was the last defense. It was also the best defense of Europe. You see, England had been neutered. Spain had been neutered. Their armada was completely wiped out. Italy, of course, Rome had been neutered, etc., etc. You get the idea. The only one left to defend Europe was Germany. Of course, America was neutered by the Jews as well. They had full control over America through because of the central bank. And this is how they were enabled to carry out World War I and World War II. Without the central bank, there would be no World War I and World War II. So World War I plus World War II equals where we are today. We have a defenseless Europe. Europe is not able to defend itself anymore from the Jew. Remember that Judah himself, the patriarch, was one of the greatest warriors of all time. And so therefore his offspring proved to be the greatest military of all time. And it's very interesting when you look into World War II Germany. I don't know where Hitler came from. I don't know if Goebbels was a Jew. I do know that Hitler did some things in Germany that don't make sense to me. You see, a great leader would know one thing. A great leader would know. This only holds for men. This doesn't hold for Yahweh. Yahweh does not need counsel. But the German generals knew much better than Hitler how to wage war and how to win war. So I'm not so positive that Hitler, though he did great things for Germany, I'm not so sure. I know he was funded by the Jews. They wanted this war to come off so that they could kill these Germans. See, just by enabling the war, it enables the Jew to kill. He did some great things for Germany. He showed what happened when you take the parasite off your back and you dislodge the parasite and get rid of it out of your country. He showed the whole world what happens when you're able to do this. The country went from starvation and eating out of garbage cans and debauchery and business theft, property theft, and so on and so on. And within 3 to 4 years, he turned it into the top economy of Germany. It still is, I mean, the top economy of Europe. It still is today the top economy, I believe, of the European Union. So Judah is special. Because Yahweh was from the tribe of Judah. He is the Lion of Judah. So you see that the greatness of this tribe, it comes to America, America is great. It goes to South Africa, nobody was living down there. It turns a continent that was totally a wasteland into a lush, beautiful, I don't know, a paradise I could call it, almost. A paradise without parasites for a while. But as usual, they let us do the work, and then they come in and destroy everything, and steal everything. And get the natives upset and get them all worked up. to exterminate them. And today we see that the extermination of the Boer people, this extermination was helped by England. Now, they haven't exterminated them yet, but they've done some serious damage down there. And so our own brothers, Chavez Goy race traders from England, who are under the control of the Jew, you must keep in mind, do a split faction with the Boers and the Afrikaners. Another division by the Jew. A division for a reason, for many reasons, actually. Now, this was done through Freemasonry, which is one of the first things Hitler got rid of when he took over in Germany. But I still question Hitler. And I think I'm going to play you a recording in a little while here before we even get into the book of Germany Must Perish. Because I want you to see, it's an extract from Bertrand Comparé, and it's about 23 minutes. And I suggest you don't fall asleep, ladies and gentlemen. If you are looking for the truth of Nazi Germany, actually it's not Nazi Germany, but if you're looking for the truth of Germany, or you're looking for historical truth, I suggest that you listen very, very closely. Because it's been in front of you all this time. I want you to hear what would have happened. You see, when I tell you that Germany was the greatest of all time, they would have won the war, even against the Americans, too. If it wasn't for Hitler, actually. And this is disturbing. Because I do know that Hitler had a Jewish doctor and was supposedly giving him injections. I don't know exactly what happened to Hitler. You see, when I say a great leader, let me go back around circle now. A great leader like Hitler, he was only in the trenches. He was a brave man. He was in charge of a certain amount of people, which you'll hear in the recording. And he was a brave man. But that doesn't mean he knows how all about waging war. And so as a leader of a country, you should realize that you need counsel before you make all the decisions you make. Now, Hitler got to a point where he was a great orator, one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time, other than Yahweh, of course. Maybe it went to his head. Or maybe he did literally lose it. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. All I know is the Jew wanted to create that little land in Palestine, and it's true that Germany was cooperating with the Jews to send Jews from Germany over to Palestine. So much for saying that they were trying to kill them all, right? Okay. There's a lot to it, but I know that a lot of good came out of it for some years, after some very bad years. And just to refresh your memory, the Germans won World War One, and they were ready to just say, listen, we don't want any reparations. We don't want anything. Let's just quit the war right here, and that's it. Because they didn't want to kill their own brothers. However, the Jews in England would not let that happen in America. And so they pushed it until they caused Germany to lose. And Germany went back home and they were shaking their heads and saying, something, how did we lose? How is this even possible? And they would talk about it together and they figured out what had happened. That internally, the Jews were involved in all the problems that they had. The Jews are the cause of why they lost that war. The Jews in Germany. Now, of course, they knew about the Jews in the other countries causing it. But they must have not had an idea that they were so deeply penetrated by Jews in Germany. In World War I, that is. So this is what caused them to kick out the parasite. And the parasite also was working on the other side with its Babylonian church, the Catholic Church, you see. Babylon always sticks together. So, in the recording, just before Comparé goes on here, he talks about the three frogs of Revelation. And he said most people say that the three frogs of Revelation are communism, fascism, and Nazism. And he seems to agree with the communism very quickly. But he does say that the other two were fighting against communism. And you know that if Germany had won the war, communism would have been totally destroyed for a while. Or totally destroyed, you know, one or the other. Because they had planned on going right into England and closing down all the Freemasonic lodges. They knew all the names of the Freemasons. And so communism would have been thwarted, I wouldn't say forever, because the Jews never stop coming. They are like rats. You can alter their course, but they regroup and come again. And then you can alter their course, and then they regroup and come again, like rats running through a maze. Because they are rats. I mean, human rats. They literally are rats. Human rats. They look like rats. They act like rats. Rats only destroy. There's no good purpose of a rat. Whether it's human or the creature. So, let's listen to this recording of Bertrand Comparé, and I suggest you don't take this lightly, because this is very serious what he's saying right here. This is a lesson in history. Why did Germany lose the war? Because of Hitler in a great way. And so here it is.
Now, anything that rises in opposition to that, to take a firm hand and forcibly put down communism, is definitely good, and it has my approval. The same thing was true exactly in Germany. No more loathsome source of lies ever existed than practically all of our newspapers today. They like to talk about Hitler and his bully boys terrorizing the inhabitants of Germany, and they are knowing, deliberate, willful liars because they know better. Even our newspapers back in those days, I remember this back in the late 20s and early 30s, The communists were getting so bold in Germany that when any of the more conservative parties tried to stage a public meeting, a public rally, they couldn't do it because the communists came out in a big riot and attacked them and broke up the meeting. And it finally became necessary for the conservative parties to organize their own defense forces because a weak and timid government wouldn't give them enough police protection that they could hold a peaceful meeting. So Hitler finally decided, if we have to be able to defend ourselves to hold a meeting, why, we'll be able to defend ourselves. And he organized some of the good, strong, young National Socialists, and they began cracking a few communist heads with their clubs, and the rioting subsided. Now, the origin of the German Nazi Party was 100% good and beyond criticism. Well, what happened later? Mussolini was a vigorous man of action, and he came to the front as a leader in the early days of fascism. So he became the head of it. But unfortunately, Mussolini's judgment was far below his willingness to stir something up and try to do something about it. He was a vain man, and power went to his head. And he began to dream of setting up the old Roman Empire again so he could ride a white horse in the parades as emperor in all his glory. Now, the average Italian didn't want any of it. American soldiers of Italian ancestry fought well in our army, but the people of Italy just were asking that everybody let them alone so they could live in peace. And when he drafted them into his armies to go out and try to conquer all the Mediterranean nations for him to set up a new Roman Empire, their heart wasn't in it, and they did badly. You remember that the German Africa Corps under Rommel almost captured Egypt. In fact, they would have if the stupidity and incompetence of the Italians hadn't let them down so badly. It was up to the Italians to furnish the shipping to get sufficient supplies across the Mediterranean for Rommel's Africa Corps. And it was partly stupidity and incompetence, and it was partly jealousy that they would rather lose the war than have the German Rommel win it. The Italian forces, to the extent they went up against the British, failed miserably. They were whipped completely. Rommel never tried to depend upon them for any fighting because they always came out second best. But when Rommel's drive toward Egypt was at its height and finally hadn't been stopped for lack of supplies, Mussolini actually came over into North Africa, complete with white horse, that he was going to follow the German drive into Egypt and ride his white horse as emperor in the victory parade. You remember the Roman emperors always rode on a white horse. Well, he sent the Italian army into Greece, and the Germans had to stop the Greeks from taking Rome. That's what it would have amounted to. The Italian army was routed till they fled in terror, and the Germans finally had to go over and defeat the Greeks to save Mussolini from losing Italy. So the thing fizzled out when it became merely the tail to Mussolini's kite. And it can be condemned for what it finally became. Now in Germany, as I say, the rise of the Nazi Party was 100% a good and a necessary thing. And Hitler is entitled to credit for what he did to bring it into political power. But Hitler destroyed his own nation by what cannot possibly be explained as anything but one of two things, either deliberate treason or definite insanity. Now, the general staff of the German army was the most competent army command that we have ever seen. And if Hitler had kept hands off, Germany would have won the war, no question of that. Now, the only possibility they had of wrecking the power of England so that their western flank could be secure was through their submarine navy, because their navy of surface ships was definitely not big enough to be a match for England. At the outbreak of the war, Germany had 65 submarines capable of going out to sea, and some of those were just training ships. Never at any time during the war did Germany have more than 100 submarines in operating condition at the same time. And she pretty near whipped the world. And she would have, if Hitler had not interfered. He was always getting a bright idea. He was going to put the entire manpower of the nation to work on this or that, and he would not allow them to have the strength of workmen at the shipyards to turn out submarines as fast as the Navy needed them. So he definitely crippled his submarine force to the point where naval victory was finally lost. But there was quite a while there when they pretty near brought England to her knees. And of course, if England had not been available to us as a staging area, we couldn't have put an American army in Europe either. And it was Hitler's blunder that lost them that. Now, Hitler's military experience had been that he was a very undistinguished corporal in World War I. He was considered competent to command a squad of 8 men, which is not exactly a high recommendation. But any competent corporal in any army in the world knows this, that there are times when everything is in your favor and you can advance and drive the enemy before you, and there are times when you run into too much opposition and you were caught out in the open under unfavorable conditions, and the enemy is just going to massacre you if you stay there. And therefore, any competent military man, even a corporal, knows that at such times you may have to retreat to get to more favorable terrain where you can organize for a successful defense. Now, Hitler sent the German armies into Russia. And you remember, he lost an enormous number of them in the siege of Stalingrad. Well, now, Stalingrad was not an extra important place, but of course, the prestige, the town named after Stalin, he wanted to take it. Now, the Russian armies definitely had the advantage there. In the first place, the city was practically all of modern buildings, largely concrete. And the more the German artillery battered and smashed these buildings, they couldn't burn them up, and the more the German aircraft bombed them, these chunks of concrete wreckage simply piled up, affording a vast number of spaces in between these blocks of concrete where Russian soldiers could take shelter and from there fire at the German troops. In other words, the more you smashed it, the stronger fortress it became. And secondly, the German armies were not equipped in any way for the intense cold of the Russian winters. Now, the Germans have always been producers of beautifully made machinery, finely fitted. And that was true. The engines of their aircraft and their tanks and that sort of thing were beautifully made and closely fitted. And during normal weather conditions, they operated perfectly. But under the intense cold of Russia, you couldn't make that kind of machinery operate. It needed to be more loosely fitted so that the oil didn't simply freeze up in a small, very tightly fitted space and just hold that engine to a halt so you couldn't start it. And they had endless trouble when winter came, unable to start the engines in their tanks, unable to start the engines in their aircraft. But he wouldn't let them retreat. They were losing men at a frightful rate. Germany couldn't stand that loss of men. Furthermore, the Russians, largely due to American equipment sent them, the Russians counterattacked, and they finally succeeded in completely encircling the German army under von Paulus, which was trying to take Stalingrad. Now, the military knew, and they warned Hitler, they could not possibly hold out. Under these adverse conditions and the enormous Russian armies coming at them, the only thing they could do to save the army from total destruction was to retreat, go back farther into Europe where they could fight under normal conditions, where they were close enough to home that their own supplies of fuel and ammunition could be kept up, and where they would have a chance to successfully fight these enormous Russian armies. And Hitler always refused to allow it. He said every single man must die in his place rather than retreat 1 yard. And most of them did die in their place in an absolutely futile sacrifice that had no possibility whatsoever of success. And all because either a traitor bent on the destruction of his own country or a madman was not allowing his competent generals to fight a victorious war. One more thing where he interfered. The Germans had jet fighter planes in operation the whole last year of the war. Now, our best fighter planes at that time were capable for a very brief burst of speed of getting about 400 miles per hour. Now, you remember, the British started bombing Germany only at night because it was too difficult for the German night fighters to effectively attack the British bomber fleets, because until practically the end of the war, their radar was not good enough for night fighter airplanes to use to locate the bombers. Then the United States started day bombing. Now, our bombers were very heavily armed with machine guns all over with which to fight off attacking planes. And we shot down a lot of the German fighter planes that attacked us, but just the same, our losses were so heavy we had to discontinue it. Now, the Germans did lose a lot of their fighter planes, but they were able to stop us. So American bombing raids trickled off to next door to nothing until we got enough long-range fighter planes operating from fields in France that they could follow our bomber planes all the way to their destination. Then our fighter planes fought off the German fighter planes, and our bombers could operate with very little interference. The thing that defeated Germany, actually, was the bombing, because we destroyed their means of production of the weapons for defense. We bombed out their factories until aircraft production fell off so badly that they no longer could maintain effective air fleets. We bombed out their oil refineries until they were not able to produce enough fuel to keep their armies and their air fleets in operation. We bombed their railroads until they couldn't distribute fuel and ammunition, or even food. There was a lot of hunger in Germany during the last part of the war because they couldn't get their food distributed to the civilian population because the railroads had been simply bombed out of operation. Now, the only thing that could have prevented that was fighter planes to shoot down the bombers. Now, as I say, for the whole last year of the war, Germany had jet fighters, and there were no other fighter planes in the world, no other airplanes of any character in the world, with jet engines. Germany scooped the rest of the world by well over a year, and she had hundreds of these twin jet fighter planes. They were capable of sustained flight at 550 miles an hour, a good 150 miles an hour faster than the fastest fighter we had. In other words, we had no fighter plane which could ever get near enough to one of these German jet fighters to fire an effective shot at it. They could have swept in, shot down our bombers wholesale, put an end to our bombing if they'd been allowed to use them as fighter planes. And Hitler personally prevented it. His mania was no defense. Defense is weakness. Attack. We must have bombers. These fighter, jet fighter planes must be used as attack bombers. Now, they could only carry small bombs, and of course, the centers of Allied weapons production and all that were far beyond reach of any of the German aircraft. So, with their small bombs, these jet fighters were sent out to bomb the soldiers in the front lines. Now, for that purpose, as an attack bomber, their speed was too high. They weren't as effective as other planes that he had. They were being totally wasted, and it was a weapon which would have won the war for Germany if Hitler had not personally prevented its use. So they were wasted. So Hitler's mania or treason, whatever it was, prevented Germany from winning the war with their submarines, prevented Germany from winning the war with their jet fighter planes, and threw away the cream of German manhood in fighting against the Russians, where he would not allow them to operate under the skilled command of very competent officers. Now, Hitler's origin is definitely mysterious. You can't trace him with any certainty, his ancestry. There have been reports that his ancestry was Jewish, at least in part. I don't know. Authentic evidence simply is not available. He could have been a plant. There's an article, I still have a note that I made on it. I think it was an American magazine, back about 1940. by a wealthy German Jew industrialist, Fritz Thyssen, T-H-Y-S-S-E-N. He entitled his article, "I Made a Mistake When I Backed Hitler." And he gives the authentic story of how he and a few other wealthy Jews bankrolled Hitler in the early stages and financed him into power. Now, if Hitler was the fire-eating Jew destroyer that we've been told he is, how come the Jews put him in power?
Von Papen also was partly responsible for it. Von Papen was a cat's paw for the Rothschild bankers.
Yeah, that fits exactly.
Von Papen went to jail after the war, during the Nuremberg trials, and as soon as he was released, he moved right into a house owned by the Rothschilds. They put him up and kept him.
Yes. The whole thing fits as part of the picture. World War I was an attempt to destroy the strong Christian barrier to the westward march of the great masses of Asia. They attempted to destroy Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Well, they broke up the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and it stayed broken up. Germany, that they thought they had destroyed, came back. Then World War II, like World War I, was the same Jewish attempt to destroy the defense of Europe so that white Christian civilization could be overrun by the great masses of Asia under Jewish control. So at its end, Nazism, like fascism, probably came to be something of an unclean spirit. So probably that explanation of it is reasonably accurate.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd say that that's quite a narration there. And it affected me when I heard it as well. I'm sure it's affecting you now. One thing you have to realize is the tribe of Judah took on the whole world. You see that Italy was useless. You don't even hear anything about Japan. And while I would say that Japan fought on the right side of the war, that the real axis of evil was the United States, the UK, and Russia. That was the axis of evil. So World War I plus World War II gets us to the place. You heard what he said right at the end of the recording, that they were to destroy Germany so it could, there would be a defenseless Europe and they would be overrun. Hello, World War I plus World War II equals where we are today. Is Europe being overrun? I think you know the answer to that. So it's very interesting that the tribe of Judah could have beat the whole world if it wasn't for their leader. They would have beat the whole world by themselves. That's why Judah must be exterminated. As I said, their patriarch, Judah, was a great, great warrior. So, I really feel for my people in Germany. And I desire to see justice for Germany. Now, what's happening in Germany today? They're trying to wipe them out. They say it right out. The German Jew politicians say it right out. that it's a good thing that Germany be wiped off, you know, that there are, will be no more Germans in Germany. This is the hate that they have for us. This is the hate that Halel, their father, had for Adam and Eve. Halel, in case you don't know, is the true name. Lucifer is a Latin name. Halel is the original name there. And what's even interesting to note about that is hell is within that name. So we see that in America, that they desire to kill the Germans that are here now. We see that in Scotland, they're working on the tribe of Judah there and in England. We see that they're working on the tribe of Judah in Germany. And we see that they're working on the tribe of Judah in South Africa. Make no mistake that this is happening. That it's been happening. And Yahweh is very aware of it. Heyday's coming. So let's begin this book here. We will not be able to get through it all, but I wanted to give you a basic understanding about why they're trying to destroy Germany. It's important that you know why they want to destroy them. Not only one, they're masquerading as the tribe of Judah, and by destroying the literal or the legitimate tribe of Judah, that would give them even more credence. So this book, it's called The Book That Hitler Fears, Germany Must Perish, by Theodore N. Kaufman, Newark, New Jersey, Argyle Press, copyright 1941, Library of Congress, call number DD222.K3. The table of contents, just I'll read them so you'll know. It has an introductory note about this book, background of Germanism, organized Germanism, Germanism abroad, blessed are the war makers, a middle road, death to Germany, lest we forget. It's only a very short book, by the way. This isn't a long book. So let's look at the introductory note by Mark Weber. Theodore N. Kaufman, the author of Germany Must Perish, was a Manhattan-born Jewish businessman who was also chairman of a group that called itself American Federation for Peace. We've got problems right away. The Jews in peace, it's impossible. Absolutely impossible. Oh, I'm telling you, we really get some really wild, wild people out here. The Jews in truth is nearly impossible. Though they would tell you some truth if they could make a dollar out of it. So it says the Federation, the American Federation. See how they've put themselves, this Jew and his organization, started an American Federation for Peace. But no Americans were probably even involved in the American Federation for Peace. And we can see that the UN, which was another Federation for Peace, has caused nothing but war and trouble. So the first edition of this slim volume was produced in 1940 or early 1941. A second 96-page edition, which sold for 25 cents, was published in 1941 by Argyle Press of Newark, New Jersey. Both editions were issued when the United States was still officially neutral, that is, before the Pearl Harbor attack of December 7th, 1941, that brought the U.S. openly into World War II. Yes, that was a, by the way, that was a, the planes were all turned in circles facing each other so that they couldn't take off, because they knew they had already decoded Japan's, whatever you want to call it, their lingo, their crypto language, and they knew, and they were using that to their advantage. They deliberately caused it. Now, this was called a conspiracy theory for many, many years, and now it has come out within the past 4 or 5 years that it's true. And most conspiracy theories do come out to be true. Haven't you noticed that, ladies and gentlemen? Haven't you noticed that even Alex Jones, everyone said he was a Jew puppet and that he was being run by the Jews? He was trying to deflect it off on the New World Order and the Illuminati, just like Bill Cooper and all the rest of these shills. But it turned out just within the last 4 to 6 months that he blew himself up. He was Jew run. He is Jew run. He's still trying to keep it going today, even though everybody knows, because they know that we're in Manasseh here and that Americans forget. Kaufman's fervent proposal for the systematic sterilization of the entire German population was given respectful attention in the American press. By whom? Who's the American press? By Jews, yes. Yeah, it was given respectful. I mean, we should just sterilize the entire German population. But we should just keep building the African population as much as we can, because we can see that they're doing a lot of good in the world, and we would prefer that practically the whole world be Africans. And Bill Gates, you saw that in my news story recently, that Bill Gates is spending a lot of money along with the English government in order to cure malaria and make sure that these people live longer and make sure that they can keep on producing more and more and more and more people that are useless to the world, that are a trouble to the world, that are problems to the world. So let me read it again. Kaufman's fervent proposal for the systematic sterilization of the entire German population was given respectful attention in the American press, including reviews in a number of newspapers. A review in the weekly Time magazine, March 24th, 1941, called Kaufman's plan a sensational idea. Yes, I would say that it is quite a sensational idea. Germany's propaganda chief, Joseph Goebbels, seized with delight on the book. "This Jew Kaufman has done a disservice to the enemy," Goebbels privately commented. "If he had composed the book at my behest, he couldn't have done a better job." Now that's worth thinking about. At his direction, the German press played up Kaufman's call for genocide. Now, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. The Jews are calling for genocide of the white people, the Caucasian people. This is another of the origins of Jewish genocide of the white race. Do you understand that? If I told you that 55% of the population in World War I were Germans, hello? A front page article about the book in the Berlin Daily Der Angriff, July 23rd, 1941, appeared under headlines that called it a diabolical plan for the extermination of the German people. and a work of Old Testament hatred. Extracts also appear. I would change that to Talmudic hatred. They have nothing to do with the Old Testament. Extracts also appeared, for example, in the nationally circulated weekly paper Das Reich, August 3, 1941. A plan similar to Kaufman's was issued during the war years by a prominent American anthropologist. In an article headlined "Breed War Strain Out of Germans." Hello? "Breed War Strain Out of Germans." In the New York Daily Newspaper, PM, January 4th, 1943, Ernest Hooton, laid out an outbreeding plan that would destroy German nationalism and aggressive ideology while retaining and perpetuating desirable German biological and sociological capacities. But that's not what the Jews wanted. They want to completely wipe out the Germans, completely genocide the Germans. Oh, just like now we have a Harvard University professor calling for the, you know, whiteness to be killed off. Let's listen what happened here in this same thing here. The Harvard University professor's proposal called for genetically transforming the German nation by encouraging mating of German women with non-German men. You're hearing this live. You are hearing this, right? The Harvard University professor's proposal called for genetically transforming the German nation by encouraging mating of German women with non-German men. Is that happening today, ladies and gentlemen? Who would be brought into the country in large numbers? And of German men forcibly held outside of Germany with non-German women. 10 to 12 million German men would be assigned to forced labor under Allied supervision in countries outside of Germany to rebuild their economies. The objects of this measure, wrote Dr. Hooton, include reduction of the birth rate of pure Germans, neutralization of German aggressiveness by outbreeding, and denationalization of indoctrinated individuals. This plan, Hooton estimated. Now, this guy's got to be a Jew. This plan, Hooton estimated, would require at least 20 years to be implemented. During this period, he went on, encouraged also the immigration and settlement in the German states of non-German nationals, especially males. Is that what's happening today, ladies and gentlemen? Is that what's going on in Europe today? In the decades, see, now let me get this to you again. The equation is World War I plus World War II equals where we are today. Seems like that equation makes a lot more sense now, doesn't it? In the decades since the end of World War II, something of the spirit of genocidal Kaufman and Hooton plans seem to be manifest in Germany's population and immigration policies. Since the nation's defeat in 1945, the German birth rate has fallen to below the replacement level. Millions of racially and culturally alien migrants have been welcomed as settlers in Germany. The number of children of mixed ethnicity has sharply increased, and the ethnic cultural characters of much of the country has been drastically altered, especially in the larger cities. This dynamic volume outlines a comprehensive plan for the extinction of the German nation and total eradication from the earth of all her people. See, it's a Jewish plan. I agree with what Andrew Carrington Hitchcock says. We must not take out the Jewish genocide of the white race. The Jewish is the most important emphasis in the phrase. Also, contained therein is a map illustrating the possible territorial dissection of Germany and the apportionment of her lands. To all those men and women who would rather die fighting for freedom than remain alive as slaves, to all those men and women who unafraid speak out the truth as they conceive it to be truth, to all those, this is absolute bullcrap, right from the Jews' mouth. It's just a, I hope you just heard what I just said. To all those men and women who, inspired by the efforts, hopes, and aspirations of mankind, place its needs before their own, this book is humbly dedicated. Special note to the reader. Germany Must Perish presents a plan for the structure of a permanent and lasting peace among civilized nations. Now, let me ask you a serious question, dear listener. Do you think if we killed all the Germans in the world, there would be peace on Earth finally? You've got to be joking. Now, if we killed all the Jews in the world, do you think there would be peace finally? Notice the silence now. I think you know the answer. So Germany Must Perish presents a plan for the structure of permanent and lasting peace among civilized nations. It bases its thesis. Oh, a thesis. Oh, another thesis we can believe in, but just not any conspiracy theories. We don't want any of that, but we can believe in this. Of the eventual defeat of Germany by the British Empire and its allies without the assistance of the United States. However, should circumstances decree that the American public cast its ballot in favor of war as a measure of self-defense, and it is the fervent prayer of the author that this may never happen. The prayer to who? Lucifer? It would become paramount that the lives of our native sons not be sacrificed in vain, as were their fathers' lives a generation ago. You lying, filthy, rotten, murderous Jew. You are a filthy, rotten, murderous liar. If our soldiers must go forth to kill or die in battle, see, because us Jews, we're not going anywhere. We're going to sit here and let them go die in battle and kill. So if our soldiers must go forth to kill or die in battle, at least let them be given not alone a slogan, but a solemn purpose and sacred promise. Let that purpose be an enduring peace. And this time, that promise must be kept. Yes, all the Jews promise they always keep what they promise, don't they? We can see, now that we've destroyed Germany, we can see that we have an everlasting peace. Don't you see it? Now that we have the UN, now that the Tsar in Russia was killed off, we finally have peace. But now, there's no more brotherhood being talked about. Now we must kill the rest of the white race, or else we won't be able to have peace, because they're racists, you understand? So let me, as a Jew here in writing my little stupid book here, that let me promise you again that if you just kill the rest of the white race off, you know, we'll give you a purpose. If you do that, We'll have an enduring peace. And this time that promise must be kept. Oh, yes. Just like the politicians who promise during their campaigns that they will keep this and keep that, but they never do. But next time, let that promise be kept. Yes. These Jews are literally mentally ill. Just amazing. We haven't even got to the book yet. About this book, today's war is not a war against Adolf Hitler, nor is it a war against the Nazis. See, the Jews call them Nazis. The Nazis didn't call themselves Nazis. It is a war of peoples against peoples, of civilized peoples envisioning light. Yes, the light of Lucifer, yes. Against uncivilized barbarians who cherish darkness. Those are the Germans. Of the peoples of those nations who would surge forward, hopefully, into a new and better phase of life, pitted against the peoples of a nation who would travel backward enthusiastically into the Dark Ages. It is a struggle between the German nation and humanity. Oh, is that division again that the Jew is creating here? Let's see here. The German nation is now against humanity. See, this struggle is between the German nation and humanity. We must all gather together and fight this horrible evil, the German nation, because they threw us out of their country, took back their property, fed their people, gave their people self-respect again. We must not allow that. Hitler didn't want to kill his own people in England, in Dunkirk, and all these different places. Showed mercy, didn't want to go to war. He was literally forced to go to war. They literally forced the German people to go to war. You know, you can only poke an animal so long before it reacts. Hitler is no more to be blamed for this German war than was the Kaiser for the last one. Who's to really blame, ladies and gentlemen? The Jew is to blame for the war. Of course, that's true. This is a true statement, right? But get it again. Hitler is no more to be blamed for this German war than was the Kaiser for the last one. That's right. That's right. The Jew is responsible. The Jew is the one that did this dastardly thing that caused the German people, like the American people, had been the kindest to the Jew out of all the nations of the world. And when you allow a parasitic people like the Jew kindness, and you allow them into your nation, and just you will find out that sooner or later your nation will no longer be your nation. Nor Bismarck before the Kaiser. These men did not originate or wage Germany's wars against the world. They were merely mirrors reflecting century-old inbred lust of the German nation for conquest and mass murder. Total hypocrisy. Like I say, I have a saying, hypocrisy is the beacon of the Jews. Listen to this statement. They were merely mirrors reflecting century-old inbred lust of the German nation for conquest and mass murder. Who's known for mass murder? Do you know that before Martin Luther, that the Catholic Church that was controlled by the Jews, the Jesuit order, mass murdered 50 million people. 50 million people, see? I've been saying that genocide didn't just start recently. Genocide started a long time ago. And the Jews were responsible for all the genocide we can think of, practically. 50 million people back then was a whole lot of people. And guess what? They were against Babylon. And after they killed all these people, the Catholics were celebrating. This has to do with the two witnesses. And their bodies lie dead in the street, and the people rejoiced. This is according to Comparé. And then they were resurrected. Well, what happened? They were resurrected because Martin Luther, 3 years later, nailed to the door his 95 theses, which you got to realize, he knew they killed off 50 million people. It took a lot of guts to do what he did, and it created a great revolution. Unfortunately, the Jews took advantage of that revolution and used their division again to divide and divide and subdivide and subdivide. But let me just point something out here. In the American Revolution, I believe it only took about 3% of the American people to carry off the revolution. And in this case, the revolution started with one man. So we do not need all of your help, Shabazz Goy. So, this war is being waged by the German people. It is they who are responsible. That's a lie. An absolute lie. I tell you, you know, it's just it's just absolutely amazing. So let's listen to these lies as this guy puts them out. This is even before the book. We haven't even got to the book yet. This war is being waged by the German people. I just told you the German people did everything they could to stay out of this war. They did everything they could to stop the war before it. And they didn't ask for any reparations. I just told you this. So this war is being waged by the German people. Lie. It is they who are responsible. Lie. It is they who must be made to pay for the war. Oh, they've paid. They've paid not only with reparations, monetary reparations, but they paid with a severe Holocaust. But it's just a shadow of the Holocaust you Jews are going to pay for. You lied about your Holocaust. You tried to make it overshadow what happened in Germany to hide and what happened in Russia. What you people and what you did during the Catholic killing of 50 million people. And then you killed all kinds of people throughout after Martin Luther, including the French Revolution. Yes, you are guilty, but let's go on. It is they who must be made to pay for the war. Otherwise, there will always be a German war against the world. Lie, another lie right there. Another lie right there. And with such a sword forever hanging overhead the civilized nations of the world, no matter the sword of Damocles, that is. You see, Germany, let me remind you again, Germany is the last vestige for the protection of Europe. They are the last wall that's standing in the way of the Jews flooding Germany with all these people that they're flooding them with. It was the last protection. England was denuded. America was denuded. And so was all the rest. Italy was totally denuded. As you can see with Mussolini, he was living his own little fantasy world, a useless piece of garbage. The only other vestige standing in the way of the world, of course, though, was China. But they don't care about Europe. So they had to be taken care of as well. So you can see that Germany was the last defense for the tribes of Israel. That's as plain as it can be. And this is what Yahweh has revealed to me. Now do you see the big picture? Do you see why this has all happened and why World War I plus World War II equals where we are today? Of course, I understand that you can go back and further that equation, but that about sums it right up. So let's go on. And with such a sword, the sword of Damocles, forever hanging overhead the civilized nations of the world, no matter how great their hopes, how strenuous their efforts, will never succeed in creating that firm and solid foundation. I don't know why he separates the word. That firm and solid foundation of permanent peace, which they must first establish if they ever intend to start the building of a better world. According to whom? What better world are we trying to build today? What was better than yesterday? What was better than before the Jew was let out of the ghetto? That's when the world was a better place. A better world according to whom? For not only must there be no more German wars, in fact, there must not even remain the slightest possibility of one ever again occurring. A final halt to German aggression, not a temporary cessation, must be the goal of the present struggle. According to whom? The Jew? I don't care what the Jew wants. I never did care what the Jew wants, and I never will care what they want. Frankly, I like the idea that they just have joined the space team, because maybe that's the solution to the Jews. Maybe I should write a book like Arthur Topham did called Jews Must Go to Outer Space. Jews Must Perish. Why don't we send you all out into outer space in a nice space colony and see how you get along out there? We'll send you some supplies and you just enjoy yourself out there, yourselves. I wonder how the vampires living amongst the vampires would live together. They'd have all the peace they want. Wouldn't it be a peaceful colony if the Jews all lived by themselves out in space? Space Jews! There'd be all kinds of peace out there, wouldn't there? Wouldn't there? Mr. Netanyahu! Just think, you'd finally have your own country. And you could tear each other asunder, because that's what would happen. If there were no true Israelites around in the space station, you'd have to deal with your ugly women. But of course, you don't even care about women anyway. You love men. So you'd have your lesbian feminist women who love each other, and then you'd have your homosexual men that love each other, and the race would perish. And then there would be peace in the world. So he goes on, this does not mean an armed mastery over Germany, or a peace with political or territorial adjustments, or a hope based on a defeated and repentant nation. Now, in other words, we wouldn't even allow the Germans to repent. Such settlements are not sufficiently conclusive guarantees of no more German aggressions. This time, Germany has forced a total war upon the world. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. As a result, she must be prepared to pay a total penalty. Deemed by whom? The Jew? Did Yahweh say that Germany should pay a penalty? No. See, the Jew does not even care about Yahweh. They are not God's chosen people. And they do not want his counsel. They are... I heard Mr. Netanyahu and some other fellow from there. They're going to restructure the whole Middle East themselves. They made this decision. They didn't ask Yahweh, of course, because they don't know Yahweh. They hate Yahweh. They probably asked Lucifer, the God, the true God. That's the one who wouldn't give any mercy here and just say that she must be prepared to pay a total penalty. And there is one, and only one, such a total penalty, Germany must perish forever. Jew, you are treading on some heavy ground. Now, this Jew is probably dead by now anyway, which is good because... Even though they say the only good Jew is a dead Jew, I say not even a dead Jew is a good Jew. That's my saying. Even a dead Jew is not a good Jew. Make sure you listen to Andrew Carrington Hitchcock's new show, The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, Monday through Friday. I believe it's at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Hope I'm right on that one. Go, Andy, go. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. And until next time, study to show thyself approved.